And we have to decide now, as we approach our time barrier, are we talking about a certain television show called True Detective, or are we talking about a list of people's names?
We'll do a little bit of
stay better. With us. Stay with us, listeners. The best is yet to come. How about that?
So we wanted to kind of talk about some people we lost this year in the entertainment world. And a lot of big names passed away this year. I think a lot of shocking deaths kind of happened this year. And earlier, we'll go off with the one that happened earlier in the year that you and I were actually with one another, like out for dinner or something the night before it happened and talking about him. Was Philip Seymour Hoffman. And when Hoffman passed, it was you, another friend of mine, Mark, and then me, we're out eating, and we were having a conversation about like great actors of today or whatever. And I remember you were the one that brought up Philip Seymour Hoffman. And we had a conversation about him. And so the next day, we find out he passed away.
Yeah.
And Hoffman was one of those guys. He could hit the parts he played were, I know you can go on probably longer than I can, but the parts he played were so interesting and so they were so good. Every single one that I saw, I mean, like, he could literally go from being Capote and win an Oscar to be Ben Stiller's best friend in Along Came Polly and steal every scene he was in.
Yeah, or the villain in what, Mission Impossible 3?
Mission Impossible 3. 3. I mean,
yeah. His range was unbelievable. And I think the thing that we talked about, I think even that I don't remember our conversation that night, but it was, you know, he was at this, it's so sad because for many, many reasons, obviously, but you know, it's so sad to see someone like clearly in complete control of their career. You know, like, I mean, he had reached a level where, you know, what name a project that or role or something that he wanted to do or be a part of or create or whatever, and people would have bent over backwards to be a part of it. You know what I mean? Like, he was at such a point in his career that was just, it was amazing to wait for his next film. You know, like, so many of his roles were not, you know, Tom Cruise roles where it brought in, again, like, international box office sales. Like, he didn't have you know, massive pull necessarily based on like cachet of his like face on a poster, but his performances. I mean, I think one of the most interesting things I remember reading long before he had passed. You know, it was just an interview talking about why he loved sports so much. You know, and he just said, you know, it's like, I love sports because I see so much of what's similar in acting. You know, it's just it's that same performance and the practice and the and that meticulous drive to do something really, really, really well, and the nuance of it, and the and kind of the physicality of it. You know, that's one of the things he mentioned. It's just like so many of his roles, you had that like just that hungry, like you had that hungry drive of someone who was kind of like who had been playing a game, you know, like, and they were, you could just kind of see the effort. I mean, even though his performances are just effortless and beautiful, like just knowing his range, knowing his other films, you think about like how he's not just showing. I mean, Synecdoche, New York, right? I mean, like, he's got these roles where, like, I mean, like, it's just amazing. Capote, you could go down a really, really long list, right? And Magnolia has to be probably one of my favorites for many. You know, I love that film.
Yeah, one of my favorites. So that is that your favorite Hoffman performance? Because that's a question I was going to ask.
Yeah, I mean, I'm scrolling down through his IMDb page. It's really painful because there's just so many great moments that, like, I do think of like my film, like at a critical point in like kind of film school and looking back at like what do I love about film? Like, so many of those films he's in. So many of those films have great performances from him, and I love the films because of like how, like, just visceral his performances. Like, they just grab you. Like, you just realize, like, this is something beautiful. I mean, Magnolia, his performance in Magnolia, so many great performances in the film, but, like, his moments there with, whatever. They're the sort of things that get you choked up, thinking about, like, what do I love about cinema?
Yeah.
And he's in those moments. And so it is just really, just really sad, like, to see him go in such a, you know, just, you know, I hope we learn, this is a side note, but, you know, yeah. I hope we learn more about ways to help people with addiction like this, you know, because, I don't know, it affects a lot of people. I had a relative die this past year from the same thing, from a drug overdose.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you know, it's just difficult because it's like it affects a lot of different people. And you know, he was relapsed. Like, he had been sober for years and years and years and years. And then this one relapse was enough to do him in. So anyway, we don't have to, you know, dwell on the particulars too much. But it's just really heartbreaking to see.
No, it is. And that's
him go before his time.
Yeah, and we had that with other deaths. But with, you're talking about the performance, I'll go back and say my favorite with Hoffman was Almost Famous.
Saw it the other day. Yeah, on Netflix. It's so good.
It's a small role, but a lot of the times the best performances are the best scenes are when he's talking with the main character on the phone.
Yeah.
And then there's some films that, like, he's the best part of the movie, or he steals every scene he's in.
Well, and you know, a great example of this, of him stealing a scene, is Hard Eight. I don't know if you've seen that, but it's Paul Thomas Anderson's first film. And you know, the reason to watch it is it's a PTA film, clearly, right? But Philip Seymour Hoffman has this great moment where he's this, like, he's listed as just young craps player on IMDb, right?
Yeah.
But he's got this great moment where Philip Baker Hall, another actor in Magnolia,
yeah,
you know, he's walking up to the table, and Philip Seymour Hoffman has this amazing, you know, this amazing performance where he's like, okay, old man, come on, let's do it. You know, he's like the most animated that I think I might have ever seen Philip Seymour Hoffman, at least in that short period of time, right?
Yeah.
And it's so good. It steals in a very, like, slow-moving, like, just dark, contemplative kind of film. Here comes Philip Seymour Hoffman, and he just rips the film wide open. Like, it is amazing.
I mean,
it's similar to his Twister performance.
That's
right?
What I was going to say. Twister.
Goofy, yeah.
That rant. That guy who's just like, oh man, it's a Twister. Like, he was just so crazy, and that was just to show his, like, range. Was he could play that crazy character, like the guy in Twister, or like Ben Stiller's best friend, Long Came Polly. And then he does something like Capote. He was also in another film, to go off another person that passed away this year. He was in a movie called Patch Adams. And the star of Patch Adams was, of course, Robin Williams. And Robin Williams, we also kind of, we lost in a tragic way this year when he committed suicide. It's very difficult being like a comedian who goes through depression. It's not a rarity. It happens a lot with comedians and with people like John Belushi, who had tragic ends, and Richard Pryor. And Robin, for a person who brought so much happiness and laughter to the world, it was a tragedy for him to pass away like that. And his film, he was another one that people, like, he had such a great range. Robin Williams did, like, he could do, he did the outlandish comedies and all that stuff, but then he could do something like Dead Poets Society, or like Good Morning Vietnam's a great example of him doing the crazy performances that he does in the radio show, and then goes and does these very quiet, simple, like, scenes later on where it's you're seeing him get to act and the kind of the heart of his character. And,
well, I mean, you know, Goodwill Hunting, you know, classic.
And and it's just, because I know you could talk about Hoffman and I could talk about Robin Williams all day, because we talked about with my roommates, the death of Robin Williams was probably, for me, one of the hardest celebrity deaths I remember. Like, it was difficult. We talked about it almost every day for like 2 weeks in our apartment of him passing away. And I remember, and we went like 2 weeks or a week or so without, because everyone else was like starting to watch movies with Robin Williams. And you talked about a little bit in the pre-show, we're talking about Hoffman, was I couldn't approach watching those movies right after his death, because it was difficult. It was difficult to watch that and realize that he was gone. And then
everybody deals with it in different ways, I guess. Yeah. But I mean, we were talking about, you know, these films getting promoted, the final films of, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman,
yeah,
with his image in the poster, like in here in Portland, and they were playing at one of my favorite theaters, and it's just like, I just can't, you know, I can't is the wrong word, but I just didn't want to go, because it's, yeah, like, this is kind of acknowledging that, like, this is the last time I'm really going to go sit in a theater and watch it. And I know other people would say, like, the opposite of, like, well, yeah, I got to go see it, this is the last chance. But for me, it was just like, I don't know. It's like, I want to savor it. Like, I was expecting and anticipating 10, 15, 20 more,
yeah,
amazing performances, amazing films, you know, selfishly, I guess, right?
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But also just, like, I wanted to see what he would do, like, because both of them, yes, obviously. I mean, like, and we have a list of a lot of other people that were lost this year, but
yeah,
I think in particular for both of them, it definitely felt like, you know, that momentum was on their side, and to see someone work so hard for something for so long and rise up to that level, you know, you just it's tough to see them, you know, to end their, especially with Robin Williams, ending his own life, like that's just the worst that can ever happen.
Yeah, Rob, because I'll talk about it too, because I talked about after he died, you talked about the stuff with Hoffman and a relative. When I was younger, I'd gone through a depression in my life, and I was kind of always seen as the funny, this is like group therapy almost, I was the funny guy, but on the surface, I was very depressed. I was in high school, and in all honesty, it was there was a number of things that helped me come out of a depression, but one big thing was I watched a lot of Robin Williams movies.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And it is kind of ironic that was what kind of helped me get out. His characters were just so good, so beautiful, beautiful performances that I grew up with as a kid.
I think the thing that's so difficult to pin down about his performance is there's such a tenderness in some of the moments in the films that a lot of people, there are a lot of funny people. I mean, we know people in our own lives who are hilarious, you know, but to have that ability to make someone just absolutely fall out of their chair laughing, and then have those beautiful little moments in Mrs. Doubtfire or, you know, Dead Poets Society or whatever list of films you can go down, to where it just it's his eyes, it's his, you know, Patch Adams. I've cried many times watching that. You know, it's just like they're just steeped in this rich, like, human emotion that's like the full breadth of it, you know, the funny and the really sad. I think he captured that like very few people have been able to do, because yeah, I mean, we don't have to pick other. I mean, I was getting ready to like think of other comedians. It's like, it's not fair. Like, he was just exceptionally good at what he did.
Yeah,
you know,
it was. I will honestly argue that Robin Williams was one of the fastest minds of comedy, probably the fastest mind of comedy ever, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, so let's be clear. Some of his, like, because there were discussions about like his early days, and he was pretty open about using like cocaine like early on, like, so like I think some of his stand-up performances might have been a little bit drug fueled,
later on. I remember I watched recently a stand-up thing he did. It was a comedy special, or it was a stand-up he did at for a USO tour, and so I think he was in either Iraq or Afghanistan, and it was a 20 minutes, like a 30 minute stand-up. It felt like he only had like 3 minutes of material that he actually had written out. The rest were all just like talking to the crowd, and like he would just go a mile a minute, and you had no idea.
I don't mean to take anything away from him, because obviously he was a genius. I mean, the classic thing to watch, and it's on YouTube, is the Inside the Actor's Studio.
Oh yeah,
his run on there when he's talking about doing impersonations, and oh my goodness, I mean, You know, he takes a lady's scarf out of the audience.
So great.
And he turns it into, what, like 20 different characters within like 30 seconds or something insane? I mean, like, you're right. His mind moved at a speed that was just and that's what Inside the Actors Studio is a great moment to watch there, because you have one of the most stoic individuals interviewing him.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, how quickly does your mind move? You know, and all these things. And William's just, yeah, he can't even comprehend, like, you know, he's just like, it's just how it is. It's how I think. It's how I, you know, it's innate to him. So,
yeah. And
yeah, I mean, he was a treasure.
He was. And we can, like, so we'll go through a few real quick, just the people that passed away this year. But those are the two big ones that, because that was a big, Hoffman was a big influence for you. Williams was a big influence for me. A few people that lost this year. Joan Rivers, one of the funniest women probably ever, and another one who had those just sharp one-liners that came out of nowhere, and she'd be done and be over with. And constantly working till the day she died, probably. Like, she was constantly doing stuff. Another great legend that we lost was Mike Nichols. And Mike Nichols done one of my favorite films of all time is The Graduate. And
yeah,
I mean, Nichols won I think he was one of the ones that did it. He won an Oscar, an Emmy, a Grammy, and a Tony. He was, I think someone once said that the smartest table in Hollywood was when Mike Nichols was sitting alone eating dinner. And
I've never heard that. That's a great line.
The IQ went down when someone else sat there. And he did Charlie Wilson's War with Hoffman. I forgot about that. He did.
Yeah.
And he did. I think he did the Birdcage with Robin Williams. So like he's connected as well. Like a lot of just great stuff. And Birdcage is one of the best comedies. And speaking of comedies, we lost another great comedic director with Harold Ramis. And he wrote Ghostbusters, wrote Stripes, or directed Groundhog Day. I think co-wrote and directed Caddyshack, co-wrote Animal House, like all these, those type of groundbreaking comedies of the 70s and 80s, and a little bit of the 90s. Yeah, and then to go off, another few people that were more old school people from the golden age of Hollywood, we lost Lauren Bacall. She was the wife of Humphrey Bogart. Great films like The Big Sleep, To Have or Have Not, a lot of great performances. And then she was big in the golden age of Hollywood. Shirley Temple, like one of the first big child stars. Mickey Rooney, another big child star of the 1930s and 40s. James Garner, who, phenomenal actor that did, he was doing stuff. He was in The Notebook. That's what people know of him today. But he had done, like, a lot of big things. He did Maverick TV series and then did the Mel Gibson movie. But last thing before we go, really quick, just because I don't want to end on a sad note of the people who we've lost this year. So let's go for a short period of time on the anthology series that we've been having on TV with things like True Detective and Fargo. It's a horrible segue, but we'll do it anyway.
Let's lighten the mood and talk about True Detective.
Let's talk about True Detective, which is so, like, happy.
Upbeat.
Well, it was, so we're seeing, with television, we're seeing a lot of, it's basically, it's becoming cinema to some extent with these anthology shows like True Detective and like Fargo, where it's too short for these seasons, too short for a TV series overall, too long for a movie. And so it's really interesting to see these basically 8-hour movies or so played out over time. Was kind of, I'll let you go on True Detective. You can talk more about it. You're so passionate about talking about True Detective.
Well, I think the key thing that you brought up is true. It's just, it's really interesting to think about telling a story in that format where it's not quite a film. The interesting thing about the television show is like your season arcs. And because it's an anthology, like the season arc and the episode arcs can be so much more interesting. I don't know if so much more interesting is a fair. It's not a fair fight. I mean, a film a film seems to be at its best, at least the ones that I've enjoyed a lot lately have been these kind of singular, I'll pick a film that I love, you know, Interstellar. Like, Interstellar is kind of this, like, singular look at, like, love and time. You know, you could say that there's multiple topics, you know, that are brought up, right? But it is this kind of, like, it wouldn't be a great TV show necessarily. And there's something really nice about, like, because of these anthologies and, like, True Detective, you can have this more, you know, some of those episodes, because I've gone back and watched, I've watched it almost twice, basically. And because my brother and I talked a lot about the writing of it, you know, it's like, okay, well, you know, how did we get from here to there? You know, what happened in between? And there's some of those where you're expecting, you know, they set you up for something and they really kind of turn and change your expectations, right? But the thing is, they'll spend an entire episode of True Detective basically, like, towards the end there, I think it's episode 7 or 6 or 7, where it's pretty much just the two of them, like, kind of coming back to terms with one another, you know, after this falling out. And it's like, it's such a, you know, the pacing of it is just so unique to the landscape around us of everything else. Like, to spend that much time, it's just really, it's just different. It's a change of pace, you know, and the series is, I mean, if you want me to list, like, what makes the series great, like, I'm not there's so many people who have raved about it. I mean, the single take that runs for, what, 6.5, 7 minutes or something like that?
6 minutes, yeah.
You know, watched it multiple times, many times. And when I found out that they had, because I was under the impression incorrectly that they just weren't, you know, like, they weren't crazy enough to shoot the whole thing on film. Well, they were crazy enough. They shot the whole thing on film, and that sequence is all on film at night. You know, like, if you know anything about the, like, technical production of something like that, like, that is unfathomable.
Yeah.
You know, because I was certain. I was like, low lighting, you know, all the practicals, like, just like we've had film for this length of time, you know, going back almost 100 years, and it took this moment basically to get something that amazing. Because we're not the only, like, a lot. No, I mean,
being a little bit hyperbolic, but before, I love that.
No, I'm saying, like, we've seen, like, one take shots. I mean, Boogie Nights with Philip Seymour Hoffman. You know, like, you can go down a list of, like, films that have had these great moments, but I mean, they did it in such a, like, at rare form, and especially, like, okay, Boogie Nights, and you can go down some of these films, like, a lot of times it's kind of like, it feels kind of gimmicky, you know, like they're following a character. And I mean, I haven't seen the film, and I'm not bringing it up to say it's negative, but Birdman, right, is just continuous shots roaming around, right? But, like, the thing that was so amazing about True Detective in that moment is, like, I didn't realize it was a single take when I watched it. Like, the first time I watched it, I was so engrossed in the story and the reconnaissance that was unfolding before me, right? Like, this amazing performance. I had no idea. It took, like, I think it was talking to you, and you were like, you realized that was single take. And I was like, no, there's no way that was a single take. It's not possible. Like, I was so enthralled in the story, which is the point, right? I don't know. I mean, just so many things done right. I have to, not that we're talking about this necessarily, but with an anthology, the whole thing resets with season 2.
Yeah, I have
low expectations, lower expectations than I think a lot of people do. Mainly just because I think way too much in the all the writing that seems to come out about the whole, what was so great about the shows, so much praise gets put on the writer, showrunner, and I don't have his name pulled up here, but we can Google it here and not embarrass ourselves quite so bad, but I think so much more attention needs to go to the director, and I'm gonna butcher his name.
Cary Fukunaga. Horribly. Cary Fukunaga.
Yes, I don't know how his name is not printed on almost every paragraph about the series, because, okay, yes, the writing is great. There's controversy over some of the you know, overuse perhaps of other people's work.
Yeah,
you know, and there's the whole debate over that. But, like, so much of what makes that series work, when you really get down to it, is that unified visual theme that's beyond just like, you know, a DP setting a tone and lighting, right? I mean, like there's an attention to detail that is just rarely seen, and it's because they had the same director and the same, you know, the same writer through the whole thing, and I just don't see magic. If lightning strikes twice, I'm completely wrong, but there's something so, you know, and you can debate the ending of the series, definitely, of season one. But
yeah,
lightning struck for a lot of people right there in the middle of the season. I mean, you know, people crashed HBO Go trying to watch the thing every week. You know what I mean? Like, people could not get enough of that thing. So yeah. It was a special run.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think the acting was superb from McConaughey and Harrelson. And the direction with Fukunaga is really, like, it was phenomenal. Like, talking about the long take, I remember watching it, and I think halfway through, problem was I was told there was a one take in that episode. So,
that's unfair.
Well, see, I didn't realize it till halfway through the shot. I was like, oh, this is in one take. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. And then I rewound it. I was like, where did it start at? And it starts like way outside the building and goes all the way through all this. It was insane. But yeah, season two, I'm interested in season two. I'm kind of the exact opposite of you. I like the cast they put together. They're interesting choices.
They're trying to create a chemical reaction by putting all those people together. I mean, we'll see.
Colin Farrell, Vince Vaughn, Rachel McAdams. I'm big fans of all of them. I'm interested to see what they can do with this material. I think my biggest, because your thing was about the director, my biggest concern, or what I disliked about it, with season two coming up, they switched the setting, and it's now in California, which could be interesting, but I think one thing that helped the first season was the atmosphere of, like, Louisiana, and, like, that Southern Gothic type
atmosphere. And, you know, you don't have to write about only what you know in, like, the most simplistic of terms, right? I mean, like, you can expand beyond where you've been. But, I mean, you know, he was from the writer-creator. I mean, he spent, you know, years writing several... His work before was, like, novels based in that environment of basically True Detective, you know, of Louisiana. He's from that area. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's... Definitely, it'll be worth watching. I will watch season two probably, unless something just horrific happens, you know, and it's just an utter disaster. But to think that, you know, I mean, number one, the McConaissance is such a critical part of that. I stand by my Interstellar pick. I mean, that man is exceptionally good.
Anyway, so yeah, that's been kind of a very brief summary of what's happened this year. And we wouldn't even talk about movies that much and what our favorite movies were. So, since you really go to the movies, what were some of your favorite movies that you saw this year? And this is how we'll end the show.
Oh gosh, you throw this on me here at the last second without warning. I would say that I have not seen a ton of films. I got to see Citizen 4 in theater. Interstellar I saw twice, which is a rarity. I would say, like, you know, not to keep ranting about them Kanzans, but I got to see the first time I saw Interstellar, saw it with my brother, saw it on a kind of mini IMAX, you know, whatever they've ruined the name to be, a large, huge screen. IMAX,
yeah
it was an IMAX, but it wasn't an IMAX, you know what I mean? Like, It was a beautiful projection, amazing sound, and you know, the themes of the film, like, of, you know, fatherhood and the journey is unbelievable, and it's a beautiful film, beautiful, and so many. I don't understand. I've read some of the criticism online because I walked out of there. You know, not that people care if I cried. I bawled my eyes out in that movie the first time I saw it. It moved me in a way that very few films have. And I talked to my brother. I mean, he had seen it for the second time when he was watching it with me, and he's like, yeah, it's good. And I'm like, no, how are people not absolutely, like, just destroyed by, like, what is – I understand its flaws. Like, I saw it a second time. I understand, but it's like – you're going to a film, you know, like, I'm going to stop ranting because we're almost done with the episode, but you're going to a film, like, you're going to, like, go to another world to suspend your disbelief. We're not going to, like, have this perfect, I don't know what people want. It's like, if you don't want that, what is it you want? Because we want different things. We just want different things because the film is just fiercely logical to me, like, with its own internal logic, uh-huh. And people debate that, but the performances, the themes, you know, just the fact having a son and just thinking like the decisions that he has to go through and the whole that theme that flows throughout the film, I was just deeply moved by it. I don't know why there are haters in the world, but it to me it's just like it was exceptional. So I don't know. I'm going to get hate, I guess, because I don't know enough about film or something. But, like,
okay.
I thought it was great. Thought it was great.
I'll tell you what my I was fond of Interstellar. It was good. I'm kind of like your brother.
Just tell me you didn't see it if you're going to be like, well, I'm indifferent. I don't know. I just don't understand. How can you watch a film like that and be indifferent to it?
Oh, I saw it in 70mm IMAX, like film IMAX.
Oh, I don't even want to talk to you anymore. Are we done yet?
Okay, so anyway.
You ungrateful slob. You saw it in 70mm and you're just like, it was okay. How is that possible?
It was visually stunning.
Yes, of course.
People usually follow up and say, it
moved me.
With great actors. With great actors.
Oh my gosh. And
so anyway.
Move on.
So
I'm
anyway,
done. I'm counting down now.
So anyway, favorite films for me. I loved Whiplash. I saw it Sundance. I love Selma.
I gotta see Selma.
The indie movies. I mean I like Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm just going through the list I'm seeing. I love Captain America 2. The one that I love that really it didn't play well in the U.S. Edge of Tomorrow with Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt. Did you see it?
Yeah, I did actually. I got to see that and I liked it. It's no Interstellar, but
well, I mean, whatever.
But it's clever. It's clever. I mean, like it had the whole Groundhog Day shtick, you know, that worked really well. And it was I don't like Tom Cruise very often, but I liked the film. I liked that core theme, you know, the sci-fi theme of what it was based off of. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I think it was one of the most underrated films of the year. And that's when Live, Die, Repeat, whatever it's called now on video, because they changed the name for video.
Really?
Yeah, it's Live, Die, Repeat.
Thought that was just like a poster that they were trying to like, you know, promote like a catchphrase.
Yeah,
like
they did that for the movie, but when they released it on video, they changed to Live, Die, Repeat. Edge of Tomorrow.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Look it up.
We got to end this, Brandon. Everything's just going.
Okay. We'll end it. Those are some of the favorite. I mean, Whiplash, Selma, Birdman, Guardians of the Galaxy, the Captain America, X-Men, Edge of Tomorrow. Those type of films. Interstellar. Here's the thing. Watch Interstellar. It's a beautiful film. It's something that needs to be watched. This is probably our longest show ever at the moment. But anyway, so you can follow us. You can follow CineNation on Facebook, and you can like, or you can follow us on Twitter at CineNation Show. If you choose to, you can also follow us individually. My Twitter handle is @BCS_TheFilmKid.
I am @Suite22, SUITE 22, or dose. And tell me what you didn't like about Interstellar, and then I will lampoon you fiercely in 140 characters and defend the honor of the great McConaissance.
Yep, that's all we have. Also, shout out to William Mason for doing our new logo and Dusty Fields for doing our theme music. Just want to give them helping us do the show.
Yeah, we should thank them every episode because that's a great, great logo and great music.
Yeah. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll hopefully be back with you shortly. Sorry, we've been absent for a little while. Thank you guys for listening.